talking about enrollment. But I think, you know, whether you're just talking about the weather, or whether you're talking about things you want to engage students, or things you'd like to see done, or things you want to celebrate in your department, school, or college, I think what I've learned in my year and a half here is that we're on a great campus as it relates to caring about our students and wanting to see them succeed. And I would say that our admissions officer team and the students that are here want to see our students be successful. I don't think any of us are content with retention rates in the low 70% range. When we've got 100 new students sitting in front of us, we're not looking for 30 of them to volunteer to not come back their sophomore year. I think all of us want to do better things so that 8 or 9 out of 10 are here for their sophomore year. We know that if they make it to their sophomore year, the likelihood of a degree is much higher. So it is about navigating that first year. It is about retention. But it is about the type of student we admit and that applicant and how we work with them. We knew in September and October of 2016 a lot of the names of the students who were interested in coming here. And we had that 10-month window of time to work with them and prepare them as best we can. And I think we're looking for ways to provide early intervention, early identification, and to build that network of support that I know exists here on campus. And I think we want to get students ready for that college experience. And I think that begins with the people in this room. And I encourage you to continue this discussion. You can bet enrollment will get near the top of the agenda in each of these. And we may do similar exercises, but we're inviting you to share what it is you do, even if it's not within our CAFE committee in that particular invite. But you know who those members of the committee are again, and that was Dakota Baker, our student, Annette and Steve Johnson, and then we've got Kathleen Hurst-Sweet and Sandy King and myself. Certainly share those individually as you run into us, communicate via email, phone, however you like. This is a daily conversation, and it doesn't stop or end with CAFE, it doesn't stop or end with collegiate. Today was really intended to give you a sense of what we're trying to accomplish, and we'll continue to get those updates throughout. So thank you for the conversation.
Thanks, Matt. A couple of quick comments. We have, in terms of our ranking, the last couple of years had the highest numerical quantifiable data of incoming freshman classes in the last couple of years in terms of GPA and ACT and now SAT. If you look at our historical pattern, my understanding is sometime in the past, in the last 10 years, we decided to intentionally try to drive up that ranking, and we have been shrinking dramatically since we've done that. So are those related in terms of that strategy? I think we want extremely well-prepared top students, but we also need to be aware of what our regional responsibility is and what our pool in the region looks like now and is going to continue to look like to some degree. Fine. And the reason I keep pushing this topic, go back to Russ's comments, is there are some folks in this room who have said we have the greatest problem is we lack too many underprepared students in. I've heard that consistently. That does concern me a little bit. We don't want a lot of students in that don't have the skills that we know are not going to succeed. But I also think if we let students in, we should take tremendous pride in seeing them develop and own that as something that we hold up to be proud of. And I also want to comment on recruitment efforts. Where's Kimberly? Kimberly twice now has had the math circle, is that what it's called? Math teacher circle at my home, which are K-12 teachers and some of our college faculty. I think that's a huge for discussion. We have a reception for a huge recruitment opportunity back in K-12. This year they started their meeting with something I'd never heard of before that I was there for, a math appetizer, which I thought was something to eat. but it was a math problem that they all worked in and trying to figure out the length of the coil. But I think those connections with K-12 administration, K-12 teachers, and K-12 guidance counselors is a huge thing. That was how I grew a program of anthropology that I was told when I got there, not my last institution, sort of the role that we don't have anthropology majors, we just have a sort of general education. To, from that perspective, to 40 majors in a very short period of time, and moving from one faculty member to three, and the primary focus was connection to K-12. And that was where I went out and recruited the teachers, growth for that program. So I applaud those efforts. Infrastructure updates. Again, we worked through a significant challenge with power. I just want to make sure everyone understands what the scenario is. We have a feed to the power plant or power equivalent. It splits there in two circuits, two loops that feed the campus. They're underground. They are out of sight, and I think in some respects out of mind until they don't work. Then it becomes front and center, and we would not design a campus like that today. We have a number of structural infrastructure, our architecture, that is 6 months or earlier in design that today a modern university would not pick. One, a single-eyed steam generation for heat scenario. Today, if you're building a campus, you would have multiple locations for the production of heat, so if one goes out, the whole place doesn't go down. In fact, that same scenario happened at my last institution when I got there. We had a boiler from 1967 that fed the entire campus through tunnels, and someone told me after a year and a half, no, that may not start running here. And by the way, it's old, it could blow up someday. That was a bit concerning, I guess, later. Yeah, so we went out, did an energy audit, and we got five heat producing units that drove up our efficiency. We moved from something a quarter the size of this room to five units the size of dorm food. Cut our utility bill in half and minimized our exposure and vulnerability to catastrophic failure of one source of heat. We have an electrical grid that has a single point of connection and two loops. We want to change them. We're thinking about, for example, having Norris on a direct feed from Portland so that we have something off of those circuits as a backup. We want to this summer, and we need to start doing it on a regular basis, every summer having a period of shutdown where we're going to thoroughly inspect what's beneath ground on campus. We haven't done that. Physical plant hasn't been able to do that because we have not been able to identify a period in the summer that everyone can agree to. We're not going to have a camp, we're not going to have an athletic event, we're not going to have this, and we're going to shut the campus down for that kind of preventative maintenance. The locks do it. The locks shut down not because of the ice, but they need to do that kind of work. We need to do that. We're up and running. We replaced a whole series of fuses, as I understand it, coupling boots, and also cleaned a lot of contact points. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We also had our vaults where our conduits come together in our service points because of the unusual weather filled with moisture, water. We had all that snow and melt off. We've got a lot of old electrical lines and coupling points that probably have insulation that are somewhat susceptible to moisture. One of the things that Steve's crew is doing is punching into the side of these vaults to put in drainage systems, which is amazing they don't have. So they actually self-drain. That's a good step in heading in the right direction. But again, I want to just bring you up to speed. We are going to need to make a significant investment this summer. One plus about this is I now have a very compelling, publicized case to put in front of the legislature of infrastructure needs. All universities are talking about infrastructure needs. We're the only one who can say that our infrastructure, aging infrastructure, actually caused us to have an impact on our class delivery. No one else can say that. I wish that on other people, but that's a compelling argument, and now it's in the news. So, it's not an abstract thing. We might have, too many potholes or something. I could say, look, that's such an old electrical grid that it impacted our service, and we need some assistance in operating that. And I intend to do that. I've already started the process of doing that in terms of talking with our legislative representatives. MASU, the governor's office is aware, and they can issue that in our testimony. Again, the term we are using nowadays is asset preservation in terms of making investment. IT, David, you want to give us, or David and or Scott, an update in terms of where we are?
Sure. As you might guess, when you have power surges, fluctuations, right, that can really adversely impact equipment that's powered. So we worked in earnest to get the network flying back out and working properly. I want to thank the entire group that I see in the back, right, for making that happen just as quickly as possible, as well as getting good information, just like we had with the power situation, so you all knew where things stood. As of last Thursday, we were back up, fully operational. Aberrations that you might be seeing weren't related to the 2 weeks of power fluctuation. So if you have issues, concerns, equipment that's not working, please let the IT help desk know, and we'll work in earnest to get that resolved as quickly as possible. Anything to add? All right. Thank you.
I again want to make certain that you helped dispel the myth out there that this was something we intentionally wanted to do. I actually had a parent contact me because they had heard from their son or daughter that you were turning off the power to save money. I can spend much more than what we would ever gain to turn the power off. And also, where these ideas come from, but they're out there. HLC update. I had David send a note to campus because there was an article in the paper that was okay about, again, the phrasing that our local reporter uses sometimes. I appreciate you feel supportive writing up the campus, but the way it came across is that the article was we had inspectors on campus. We didn't have inspectors on campus. We have visitation. It's a normal process we're going through. But that article generated some angst about the community agriculture folks. So I asked David to send note. We're expecting, by all indications, we can't come out and publicly say what the result is, but our accreditation will be approved. We expect to be on track. But we will have support in terms of assessment, program review, greater emphasis on professional development and documentation for professional development of the institution. We will have some some work to do over the next several years, but I'm anticipating a positive result. And we want to make certain that message is out to the students and the community.
If I could, just let me reiterate that. So I'm going to start by saying yesterday I heard an interesting phrase that's really stuck with me and rung true, and that is, positivity whispers, negativity shouts. I had never had heard it that succinctly. Think about that in our lives and how we speak of who we are, where we work, and what we do here. Yes, good news on the HLC front, really good news. Draft report has been received. That happened in January. We returned it with acknowledgement. There is a possibility these things change along the way. Something gets added, something gets removed. We really don't expect that, but because that's the case, until it's finalized by the Institutional Action Council, and we're awaiting that, expected in mid-March or early April, we're holding tight. We disseminated, President Plager mentioned, we met 18 of 21 criteria straight up. I'm going to tell you, we met 18 of 21 straight up. So think baseball. That's batting 850. That's phenomenal, right? It's a whole lot better than meteorologist forecast as well. All right, so we did disseminate Section 4 of the draft report to the curriculum committee and Gen Ed committee, so that those groups could begin to address the findings in the other three areas, right? We're after. We're moving forward purposefully. The accreditation report is going to be issued in total to the Lake State community following board action. Again, that's March or early April, so hold tight. You'll have it soon, and it really informs okay? There's a lot of good affirmation of what we're doing right, that positivity, right? And some ideas on how we can be even better and ought to be better and more intentional with what we do. Again, I'll say that we anticipate a favorable outcome, right? This was a good process. So let positivity shout. Thank you.
Just to come a little further, I want to be clear, we met all 21.
Yes, I'm sorry.
18 we met were exceeded, so we have three that are required some follow-up report documentation in the interval between now and the next report. CAFE updates. I'm not going to have each committee report out this time because of time, but I want to make you aware that all of the committees have been meeting in the whole to look at, as we move forward, and once we get the HLC report public, you'll see that the CAFE committees are aligned with what we need to do in terms of follow-up assessment. And we are working with those committees to not only be strategic in nature, but also have an assessment component to them, and that they are going through the assessment process in a way that we will produce meaningful, useful output that's useful to the institution in terms of as we make changes and document how we're making changes and how we operate, and that also we're producing documentation of those that we can use as evidence for our future accreditations. Okay? There's a direct, intentional reason for this. I have been through a number of HLC accreditations. 20 years ago, somewhere around 20 years ago, I was at an institution that got hammered hard on assessment. And we had an assessment committee. And the language we got out of that review was almost identical to what we're seeing in our report around assessment. Is a need to create a culture of assessment, not a committee of assessment, but a culture, meaning that it permeates all aspects of our operations. So that is one reason why you set up this governance structure the way it is that these committees are organized along the areas of what we need to have regular assessment going on across all areas of the institution. It cannot be the work of a single group. That won't cut it in terms of a culture of assessment. And that's one reason why we're structuring this way. Any questions about that? Provost search. I appreciate all the nominations that I have received, quite a few, more than I anticipated. And I am scheduled today. Okay, you have me on the calendar to look through those. And I will make an announcement sometime, I expect, by the end of the week as to the membership of that committee, and we will meet for the first time within the next 2 weeks, to lay out the timeline and process. A number of you have asked questions about the process, and I want to get together with that group to have that discussion and then lay out the timeline and process that we'll be using. Okay? Any questions about that? Again, appreciate the interest. Received nominations from every sector that are requested on campus and multiple. So I'm pleased there's an interest in being part of that process. Performance metric funding, I sent to you the governor's budget, which listed an increase for higher ed. Again, that's positive. Other states continue to slice away at their higher ed budget. Interestingly, the state I came from, for the first year, I think, in a decade, there's going to be an increase in funding to the university system, but a requirement of reducing tuition by 5%. And when you do the math, the increase in funding is pretty close to the reduction in tuition. So it's not going to be a happy scenario. And then there are also all kinds of strings attached to that increase in funding, including it's interesting, in our adjacent state, a mandatory statewide accountability of number of hours of professors in the classroom. Every professor has to report on, ranked across 26 institutions, and used as a metric for funding. Crazy idea, I can say that. We will see an uptick in Michigan likely a half a percentage of increase in tuition under four is 3-point-something. Maury, you in here?
Yeah, what was it? 3.5.
The performance metrics were interesting. We will see a 1.9% increase. We dropped a bit, which was puzzling. Why was that? And I still don't have complete answers, but a couple of them are startling and we're having our IR folks dig into. The one that is bizarre is we dropped from a scoring of 2-0 on Pell Grants, which made a significant change in our performance metric. Pell Grants are the number of students or percentage of students at the institution receiving Pell Grant funding. It seems odd, given the student profile we serve. However, as we've started to look at that, we have a significant number increase of students on Michigan Indian Tuition Waiver, Coast Guard, and other funding in lieu of Pell Grant. So we're actually shrinking in percentage of the student body that's receiving Pell Grant funding, and that is a metric that we took a hit on. The other one was number of graduates. And if you think about it, last year's graduating class was small, but the previous two were huge. In fact, the first year I think I was here was significantly larger than what it had been for some period of time. As that has moved through, that has impacted our performance metric funding. But the raw numbers, we come out okay. We have a change in those two areas, and the difference in funding between this year and last year equals about $100,000, so it's not a huge amount. But it, I think, reflects that the performance metrics have some challenges associated with them, which now I'm starting to pay some attention to in terms of lobbying as to how those things should be set. And remember, they're set by the business community. They're not set by higher ed leadership, you see. They're set by BLM. Is the acronym?
Yep, Business Leaders of Michigan.
And I think we will want to have some greater input in that process. But I wanted to make you aware of that because it appears odd when you see that this thing at a 1.9% increase with a 2.7, I think, last year. We were in the middle of that last year. The two primary score differences that I can see that impacted that ranking are Pell Grant recipients and number of graduates. Any questions about that? Okay. And then finally, the course and program fee update. I wanted to just give you an opportunity. Do you have any questions about the summary email that I sent out to campus? Yes? We go with the recommendation of 80% being budgeted for a particular program of program and course fees, and the recommendation is to go beyond that what happens to that additional 20%, right? And how will that be made available to programs?
How will that be made available to programs? I understand that within the cycle, that 20% sounded like might be used by another program to meet the word of the CE. But if the program that originally collected it wants to say, okay, we have this extra money, but we can spend this year, we'd like to spend it next year, how does that work?
Maury, do you want to comment on that?
So, traditionally, about 80% of the funds have been requested every year. So we bring in, let's say, $1 million, and $800,000 is requested by all different academic units, with all community units. Traditionally, some units have requested more than they brought in. That's been happening. And some units have obviously requested much less than what they brought in. And then the business office has been keeping the books for all those years and has the balance of every single unit. So if this year we bring in $1 million again, and the units put in their budgets and they request 80% for their major, you know, their day-to-day operating expenses. So let's say the door unit brings in $40,000, but you want to spend $60,000, then there would be a conversation at the provost dean's chair's level to say, yep, that unit's only bringing in $40,000, but they can spend $60,000 because we still have $200,000 that's unallocated. And so I've been meeting with the different groups about major requests for their budgets, and so there's maybe four units that could be already, you know, let me know in advance, and I've been pointing them to the provost that they would like to request probably more than what they're going to bring in this year, but they aren't even up to the $200,000 that's out there. When all the dust settles, to answer your question, what happens to that money? We look at the actual expenses that occur each year. So what you budget is just a plan. You can budget to spend all of your money next year, provided there was, you know, room in your unit to do so. And not do it. We will look at your actual expenditures and adjust the books accordingly. The money that's not spent will be set aside into a separate fund that you'll be able to view and to look at. So right now, the general fund, we hold the general fund, there's a balance that comes in, it's a negative balance of $3.3 million. But there's, in that general fund, there's your PD fund. There's money in your PD fund, okay, professional development. Money in your PD fund. There are some people here that have a negative balance in their PD fund. Okay? But 95% of that would be there. So money in your PD fund, you can go see it. You can take out that money. We're going to put those general fund dollars for those program course fees in another general fund. And you'll be able to see the cash balance.
All right. So it sounds like, from what you're saying, the way it's going to work is this year, one unit can decide to spend 80% of what we calculated brought in the program of course fees.
Yep.
And the rest of that could be used by another unit who requested more than what they brought in.
Right, but on your books we'll give you the credit.
And next year we could calculate that the number of course programmers that we actually brought in, and if we decided we would like to spend more than that, we could request to spend more than that.
Well, you would actually have a cash balance at that point. So yeah, we'd have your money from that year plus the cash balance from last
year. Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yep.
Whether there would be, like, whether we would be able to keep track of...
We are keeping track of a separate general fund, just like your PD fund.
Okay.
As a separate general fund.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. It would be a new fund. The program of course uses a new fund.
I want to continue to have updates on this as we roll out the new process.
It's a little confusing.
And then the other next step that we want to work on is I want to update the language of how we use program of course fees. I want it to scan across Michigan to start because ours is the shortest statement and most prescriptive statement in terms of how what we say we're going to do with that money compared to the other institutions in Michigan. I want to look at Michigan through other states to see what kind of language they have around program course fees and discuss whether we should update our language. Yes. Right, Paul? Yes? No? And send me a note about it. Right? So here's your reply. Is clear? Any other questions or comments about anything else? All right. Thank you very much. And we're off and on. It's hard to believe we are 2.5 minutes away from commencement. Look outside.
Yeah.
Thank you.